Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors online. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors.
Yes, thank you. That would be me, and we welcome you to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. We've been doing this for more than 26 years.
Unbelievable.
Can you believe that?
Unbelievable.
Well, time flies when you're having fun. Yeah. We're so glad you could be with us tonight. Yours truly was invited for a big ham dinner middle of the afternoon at the home of the Duke and the Duchess of Branch Lake. And I may fall asleep. If I do, Bob will have to take over. All right.
I wouldn't doubt it. You told me about that dinner. Ham.
Oh, so good.
Boiled dinner.
Scallop potatoes. I love. You ever had those, Norm?
Oh, that's a great.
Goodness.
Scallop potatoes.
You really know how to hurt a guy, don't
carrots, steamed asparagus. And for dessert, Norm, homemade apple pie with some nice vanilla ice cream on top. So good.
That's a killer right there.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, we digress. We're pleased to have you on board. We have an interesting show tonight. I think you'll agree when you hear the lineup. But first, before I introduce our special guest tonight, the crew, the guy behind the toggle switches and all the slider switches in there in the operations center, the sage of Grand Lake Stream, Mr. Norman Plord.
Good evening, Paul and Bob. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. We were down to Grand Lake Stream.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm looking forward to your report on
that. Yeah, we're going
to
do a report on that. We were invited, Bob and I, believe this or not, we were invited to go down and tell outdoor tales for 2 hours.
And then they gave you a room for the night.
Yeah, and we had a room for the night, and we had a wonderful time. What a turnout. We're going to talk about it in a few minutes.
Great.
A little later.
Let's see. And my co-host tonight, he is a registered master Maine guide. He's written a number of great books on fishing. He's a former deputy game warden. He's took tap dancing lessons when he was 10 years old. And now after spending...
I really did.
And after watching you tell stories last night at Grand Lake Stream, you should rent out for bar mitzvahs, weddings.
Yes, absolutely.
And that, you could do it.
I think you could do it. That would be too nice. Thank you for that.
Well, you did a great job. Anyway, Bob Lehman.
But you didn't do Toof Top yourself, you know.
Well, thank you.
You did all right.
Thank you, yeah. But I was second banana to you. You were.
I wouldn't say that.
How do you think? Remember.
We'll talk about it. You wait.
Do you realize the man of your age, the memory you have?
Oh, well, that's you nice.
Incredible.
Thank you.
Incredible. Yeah.
Eat my spinach. Eat your spinach, folks.
That's it.
Pray a lot.
Pray a lot and eat your spinach. There you go. All right, anyway, we're going to tell you about that in a few minutes, folks.
Right, we will.
A couple other things here we want to remind you. There's been some controversy about exactly how you stream this program live. Now, what does that mean to stream? Stream means you can get it off the internet. And what that means is there's two things. There's live streaming of the program that's in real time. And the other thing is you listen to the recorded former older programs. So here's how you do it. If you want to listen to the show live, if you've got a friend in Podunk, Ohio, and you want them to listen to the show, you just tell them to Google. Now, you might want to write this down because we did the research. Yeah. There's a lot of confusion about this.
We hammered this out.
We want to clear this up right now. All you do is you tell your friend in Podunk, Ohio, Google WVOMFM.
Right. Voice of Maine.
Just the letters all in a row, WVOMFM, which is what we are. And you'll come to the site and you just click on it. It takes you right to the live listen.
Yeah, it'll take you to the link.
Does it say listen live at the top of the...
No, it would...
No.
Let's not confuse it.
We can't go down that road.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
No, once you Google WVOMFM, you're going to get to the Google page that's going to offer you...
And you just click on...
The link to VOMFM.
Click on live listen.
And if you click on that, then it brings you to their page.
Okay.
And their front page will offer you the ability to click on live.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And now, on the other hand, let's compartmentalize this. On the other hand, if you want to listen to the old programs, which is different. You go to WVOM Podcasts with an S. Podcasts. WVOM Podcasts. If you want to listen to the older program.
And all the old shows are there.
Yeah. So there's been some confusion. There's that. And then if you want to listen live, you go to WVOM FM. Okay.
Good dude. Good boy.
Did we clear that up? I hope we did.
I had a caller earlier, as I told you, that was kind of confused about it. And he was. There's probably a lot of people who are confused.
I'm sure there are. So we try to clarify that. If you're still confused, call us and we'll try to explain it further. Let's see. A couple of things here. Oh, the guest tonight, by the way, we're going to hook up with our guest by phone at 7:30. He's the president of the Maine Professional Guides Association, MPGA is the acronym. And James Cody is the man, and he's going to talk a little bit about a plan by the federal government to create what they call a High Peaks, that's Peaks, P-E-A-K-S, Peaks Refuge up in the Carabasset Valley, Bigelow, and Sugarloaf, some of those big mountains. They want to swoop in and protect those mountains. Mm-hmm. And there are those of us who think
a little leery of the government.
Yeah, I'd be very, very leery. Yeah, I would. For a lot of reasons we're going to get into. You may disagree with that, and if you do, you get a chance to weigh in. I can tell you right now, the main guys are dead set against it, and James Cody is going to tell you why
at the
7:30 break.
It probably would make the mountains off limit.
We'll find out. Okay, let's see. What else we have here? Want to remind you that if you'd like to get a subscription to the journal, you can call Alicia, our gal in the office there, who has the charge of subscriptions. And the number there is 732-4880, 732-4880. And want to remind you once again that we are collecting fish and game recipes for our website. And we've got quite a few recipes on there now, Bob. If you want to add one, we'd be glad to get it. I know you're quite a cook.
Yeah, they mailed them to me. I'm getting some of those.
Oh, yeah. Well, send them to me so I can put them on the website.
I'll certainly do that.
Anyway, if you have a recipe, we welcome you to send it. And you can email it to me, vpaulr@tds.net. And or you can mail it to me if you can find my address there in the Sporting Journal. But send us your recipes and we'll add it to the website. And look forward to anything you may submit. Let's see. Outdoor Digest time. I want to remind you again that the DOE permits have been drawn for this fall. The deadline, however, for accepting your permit is September 12th, and you have to make sure that you lock it in. If you don't lock it in, you'll lose it. They want your $12, right? So make sure if you got a permit that you don't forget to apply for the final permit, and you can do that online at the Fish and Game website. Bear season opens tomorrow at the crack of dawn.
Wow.
And
it's going fast, isn't it?
That is. Hard to believe. We're almost into fall.
Yeah.
Anyway, bear season opens in full swing. This is big business in the state of Maine. Mm-hmm. You would be amazed at how many bear hunters you're going to find in the woods and how many bear guys are waiting to guide all of these clients from all over over the world, Bob.
Yeah.
We have quite a bear population in this state. And we have to keep them in check, and that's how we do it. Yeah. So anyway, that opens tomorrow, and we wish all of you bear hunters, particularly those visiting from away, we wish you a safe hunt, and we hope that you will get a chance to see one of those critters from a bear stand. It is a thrill that you won't soon forget. And I think it's time to bring in the band.
Here they come now, right through.
There they are. Oh, they're looking good tonight, aren't they?
Looking good.
Yeah,
hey,
they look fresh.
How you doing?
Yeah, that guy looks a little hungover there.
Yeah. And you work for me. Yeah. This is my rock.
Yeah.
I got you off tempo, didn't I?
Well, we got talking, you know.
I did. I know I got you.
He was asleep at the wheel.
No, he was just off tempo. I got him off tempo.
We thank Jimmy Layton for that.
Yeah. You want another stab at it?
I'm sorry?
Well, next week you can do it.
We can do it. Yeah,
what's going on in the
whole thing?
What's going on in the fishing world?
I think we should take this 3-4 minutes to talk about where we went last night. People
sure.
want to know.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
We went down to a little town called Grand Lake Stream, Maine.
Yep.
And we did, I don't know, I guess you'd call it, I don't know, it really wasn't a lecture. It was kind of a little tales type thing that we tell. And we're open, as I said last week, we're open to Bar Mitzvahs and wedding. No, I'm kidding. But we had 2 hours worth of this. And we had a massive crowd. I wouldn't believe it. I must have been 100 people there.
I was stunned. I figured maybe a dozen people would come to see Bob and Paul.
Yeah, you know.
But not that many. They were, what a great turnout. Oh, goodness, what a friendly crowd.
I think everybody in town showed up. And that's not a big town, yeah. My goodness.
And you know, when I was driving down, I've never done this before, and I said, how, and I know Bob likes to talk, and he's a good talker, and he's got a lot of stories to tell, but how are we going to fill 2 hours? And by golly, Norm, we did.
Yeah.
We filled 2 solid hours,
yeah.
And we had a little, you know, exchange with some of the folks in the audience.
Yes.
Had some trivia questions, gave away a few gifts, some books, yeah. And right. other yeah. swag.
Yeah.
But anyway, Bob shone last night. You just see this guy.
Oh, that's nice. Well, that's awful.
He was hot. That guy, he was rocking. Bob was rocking last night. I want to tell you.
Did anybody record this thing?
Nice, we Bob. Should have.
Yeah, appreciate I would think so.
We should have videotaped. If I had known it was going to be that much fun, I'd have had somebody videotape it. Because it really went well, and I told a couple of good stories too, didn't I, Bob?
You certainly did, and I must say the crowd cheered, they applauded, they stood up a couple of times, applauded, and we were both blown away. What wonderful people!
We were made feel very welcome.
That's
and
great.
It was such a warm, rewarding
reception,
thing.
No question.
It was great.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you to the folks at Grand Lake Stream for inviting Bob and Paul to come down and shoot the bull. We had a great time and. Maybe we can do it again sometime. And they put us up at a lovely cabin.
Oh, heaven.
At the
Mrs. Whiteley.
Sue Whiteley's cabin.
Mm-hmm.
They put us
a
up.
Log cabin, and they're neat and clean and everything available, including TV.
And just before and bedtime, heavens. Before
beautiful.
Bedtime, she came in with some homemade apple crumble with some ice cream.
Wow. Yes, she did.
Wasn't
she
that
did.
Good, huh?
Wasn't that something nice? Yeah. I'm telling you, they're the nicest people, those Whiteleys.
Yeah.
And they have some of the, as I said before, some of the nicest cabins, Paul.
They are beautiful.
They're roomy. And the bed, I slept like a log on that bed there last night.
Yeah.
I woke up just once. And for me, waking up just once is nothing I generally do. It's up 2 or 3 times for me, you know, my age and everything. But I woke up, I just went right off to sleep.
Yeah, and lovely accommodations. Great people, and again, we thank them for allowing
so much.
Us to,
yeah,
be,
and
to be there.
We saw some friends there, too, old friends. Chris and Lindsay Wheaton were there.
Yep.
And we said hello to them, and a lot of other people came up afterwards and introduced themselves. And we had, we almost talked to people for half an hour afterwards. That's always a wonderful compliment.
We did.
They do like that.
And I sold a bunch of books, too.
Yes, you did.
Which was great.
Yeah. And also, if somebody listening down in town there, you can buy my books right over the store. They got plenty of them right there.
They got
all three of them. Salesman Angler.
Yeah.
Fly Fishing Maine.
They're all there. Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That was great. Anything else in the fishing world?
Yes, lots of things, but that's not time enough for tonight. Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to mention something else. What was it?
Well, we do know that they were catching some salmon on the lake, which kind of surprised me.
Yes. That's right.
They were using lead core line, Norm, and moose licks with a dodger.
Yeah.
And they caught the young fellow there that we met. I've forgotten his name.
Brought in a big one.
Caught a real nice landlock.
Brought it over and showed us.
Yeah. That's pretty good for the middle of August.
They had four lines out, all lead core. Four lines, all different levels.
Yep.
And the two nights before, they caught 9 salmon in an hour or two. And then the next night before last, they caught 5. And then last night, they caught like 7. Salmon in an hour and a half up on West Grand Lake. And they were down, he said they were down from 40 feet, 50 feet. They went down 30, 40, 50 feet.
Yeah.
It was their lines. You know, they spaced them out so they'd have distances between lines and lures. So, and that's what happened.
Oh, they're getting at different depths.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With their moose licks. Yeah. And they had another lure that I didn't recognize. Never heard of it. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, anyway, we had a great trip, and we enjoyed every minute of it.
Mm.
Let's see, what else we have here? Oh, okay, I think it's time. I want to remind you again that we'll be talking to James Cody at 7:30 about the High Peaks Refuge plan the feds have for Western Maine, and we'd like you to listen to that. And if you have some opinions, we welcome your calls. What is the number, Bob, if somebody'd like to join us tonight?
1-800-966-1039, and you dial the whole number, even if you're local. 1-800-966-1039. And that's our call letters, 103.9, by the way.
Yes, sir. And you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine,
mm-hmm.
News Talk Network.
Mm-hmm.
Time for our trivia question. Bob has generously agreed to send you one of his famous streamer flies if you know the answer to this question. A trout stream in Maine that is popularly regarded as the best in New England is also the shortest at a little over 3 miles. We want you to name that stream. Now, I ran that by Bob last night as a test, and he knew. So maybe you will, too. A trout stream in Maine, popularly regarded as being one of the best in New England, if not the world, is also the shortest trout stream in Maine. We want you to name that stream. 1-800-966-1039. Ponder that, and we shall return. Okay, we're looking for an answer to our trivia question. I'm going to let Bob Lehman judge the veracity of your answer. And he, since it's his fly, he's giving away, so I'll let him decide whether you're right or not. Do we have a caller, Norm? Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors.
Yeah, this is Sneeka.
Hey, Sneeka. How you doing?
Good, bossy.
Not too bad. Not too bad. I'm sitting on my fly bench like I do every Sunday night and listen to you guys.
Oh, that's good.
Great.
And would it be Rapid River?
Rapid River, that's a river, not a stream. We call for a stream, but you know something? You're absolutely correct.
He is right.
And yeah. You're going to get one of my flies. Not that I need, that's that you need another fly, because I know you're one of the best fly tires in the state.
One that you invented.
Yeah.
Not a regular ghost or whatever like that. Something,
I'll tell you, I'll send you one of my Corning trout. Probably never heard of a Corning trout.
No.
Nope. I'll send you a Corning trout fly. And it's
okay,
it's a collector's item.
Yeah. Hey, Fern, one of the things I never realized that it's that Rapid River up on the border there is the shortest good trout stream in Maine. I had never heard that. Did you know that?
I didn't. I didn't know it was the shortest one, but I know it's only 3 miles long because I spent years and years pounding that area.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been there one time. I was there, rained the entire day. We walked in, walked out, and we were some soggy, and my son caught one, and I think I got skunked in there, but I know there's some beautiful fish in there. I've seen them.
Oh,
great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, you've won the fly. Anything else on your mind tonight, Fern?
No, not right now. I'm just going to listen and try to learn something, because I'm dead set against this alliance, what the government wants to do with the high peaks, whatever like that.
Yeah, why?
All you've got to do.
Why are you?
The reason I'm against it.
Yeah, why are you against it?
Take a look at what the restrictions are at the Umbagog Refuge, and you're going to have the same cussed thing there.
Okay.
What they claim to do, what they're going to say, what they have said, that I can find out anyway, that all traditions will be, you know, we're going to still be able to do the traditional use and whatever like that. But I'm willing to bet $1,000, one of the first things going to do, all right, you're not going to be able to trap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had a exploratory meeting, I guess, up at Carabasset. I know there was a lot of opposition to it, but they are promising that if it becomes a refuge, all traditional uses will be allowed. And my problem is I don't trust the feds. I have never trusted the feds.
Yeah, and who are you going to trust?
Yeah.
You got that right. No, we don't need that.
Yeah.
We can
take probably
care
be
of
for
that
the elite.
All by
yeah,
ourselves.
Yeah.
For the elite meat to eat.
Yeah, right. Anyway, we're going to cover this whole area with James Cody from the Maine Guides Association at 7:30. We hope you listen in, Fern.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah.
Take care now.
All right, stay on the line, Guy, okay? And so get your address.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Yep.
Good night. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye-bye. That's the correct answer. Fern Bossy got the right answer. It's a Rapid River up there near Umbagog. And I didn't know there was a federal refuge around Umbagog. Did you?
I did not.
That must be in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Probably in New Hampshire.
Just the rapid at the lower end of it one time.
Yeah.
I had my suit clothes in, and I drove in as far as you could get, and then I walked in and fished it. I caught two small salmon on a fly, which I had with me. I had my working clothes on, tie, suit, and a hat and everything, you know. But I waited down, walked down. They didn't wait out. I did found a spot where I could throw out, and I did catch a couple of salmon. They weren't very big. They were maybe 10, 12 inches, you know, threw them back. But they have salmon all right.
Yeah.
I guess there's bass in there now.
Yeah, that's a sad thing,
it
but
is
there
sad.
Is, yeah.
It is.
You know, we've had, we spoke last night. We're so proud of the fact that we have listeners outside New England.
Yes.
And one of them, well, I guess he's in New England, but he's outside Maine. One of them is a listener, a fellow named Tony Ostrowski, I guess I pronounced his name wrong. Irish guy, Tony Ostrowski.
Oh, he's Irish as Paddy's pig.
Anyway, we got a really nice email from Tony after last week's show, and he sent a couple recipes. But anyway, before I tell you about his recipes, he wanted to talk a little bit. I didn't mention this to you, Bob, but he says he's owned two bamboo rods. We were talking about bamboo fly rods last week.
Mm-hmm.
He's owned a couple in his lifetime.
Yeah.
One was an Orvis Battenkill.
Oh, yeah, that's a cocker.
It was a 7-weight. The other was I'm not how to pronounce this, Montague, Montague.
Montague.
Oh, Montague. Okay, it was a Montague. Yeah. That he bought for $30 at a flea market.
He got a buy.
I would say so.
It's not
an
expensive rod, but it's a bamboo, all right.
But he says that he's never used any of them because he's afraid he'd break it.
Well, I know. I know a fella who gets a fish on, and he would take off the leader and land the fish with his leader because he didn't want the tip to break. And that's the truth.
Oh yeah. I don't know. Why have a fly rod if you don't want to use it, right? But it's a collector's item, something you can be proud of. The other thing, Tony, he was one of the first people to send in a recipe for the that we add to our recipe on our website at Outdoor Connections. And I'm not so sure, Tony, about this. I'm going to have to think on this, but maybe you folks at home would have a thought whether you like the sound of this. This is Tony's recipe. You take a pound of spaghetti, a jar of your favorite sauce, and two cans of albacore tuna fish.
Oh, my.
And you cook the pasta, put the sauce in the pan with two cans of the tuna fish, cook it a little bit until it's hot, and then you stir it, and then pour it onto the pasta. He says it's fit for a queen. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Norm?
I would have to try it.
You're such a diplomat. When I read it to you earlier, you...
Well, my immediate reaction would be, ooh.
You started choking.
Yeah, that would be my immediate reaction. But, you know, sometimes what you anticipated being could be quite different than what it actually is. So,
yeah. I have a hard time buying fish in a pasta sauce. I want to have a meatball or a sausage.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it may be more of a cultural thing.
Maybe. You know, he said his mother used to make it.
Yeah.
I think I'd save the tuna for a tuna fish sandwich or something.
He said his mother was Italian.
And that's what I would...
Yeah.
And I was tempted to suspect that because they cook with quite a bit of the, like, calamari.
Are you ready, Norm, for the second recipe? you ready?
Fire away.
Okay, folks at home, get close to the radio. Mm. Here's Tony's second recipe. Let's see if I can find it here. Oh, okay, you take... Okay, this is the second recipe. You take a half a pound of spaghetti...
Mm-hmm.
That's a good beginning, right? We all love spaghetti.
Yeah.
And then it gets better. You take two cans of flat anchovies.
Flat anchovies?
Yeah. What is a flat? I mean, an anchovy is a fish, a salty fish.
Absolutely.
What's a flat anchovy? Is that when you smash with a hammer?
I don't have an answer for that one.
Anyway, you cook the pasta. You place the two cans of anchovies in the garbage. No, I put them in a pan with a couple of dashes of pure. I'm sorry, Tony. Tony, I love you, Tony. I love you, Tony, but boy, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I can finish it. Put the anchovies in a pan with a couple of dashes of virgin olive oil on medium heat. Keep chopping up the anchovies and pour it over the pasta.
I would say both recipes definitely have a root in Italian.
You think it's cultural?
I think so. I really do.
I hope I'm not being politically incorrect here.
No.
Tony, we love you, all right?
Yes, we do.
And we believe you're innocent until proven guilty, so we're going to try it. Norm's going to give it a shot. I may taste it.
I'm not sure about the anchovy part.
Well... The tuna maybe, Tony, but I'm not about both those anchovies. Boy, you gotta be a real man to eat those anchovies. Anyway, thank you, Tony. We appreciate your writing in. We love you, guy, and we're glad you listen every night. And thank you for the recipes. And I swear, Tony, these will be added to the Northwest Sporting Journal recipe website. We may have a little asterisk in there. I'm not sure. But we're going to make sure they get listed.
Well, if we get people who try the recipes, we could... On a sunny night, let us know what you thought of it.
Yeah, somebody at home, try it, and then tell us what you think. And be honest with us. If it's good, say so. If it's not so good, tell us.
Yeah.
We'd be interested. Okay, at 7:30...
One thing, Paul, is different.
Yes. It is very different.
It certainly is.
At 7:30, we're going to hook up with our friend James Cody. He's going to tell us a little bit about the Maine Professional Guides Association and their take on this new plan the feds have to take over the Carabasset Valley and make it into a high peaks refuge.
Oh, boy.
Ta-da-ta. All right.
Well, we're at that point, so...
Let's take a break?
Let's take a break, and right. He'll be on with us after the break.
All right. Sounds good. Let's go for it. Okay, we are back with Maine Outdoors. Well, you know, Bob and Norm and I are all cooks. We pride ourselves on our prowess in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And we were talking about ways, Tony, that you might improve on your tuna fish spaghetti.
Yes.
And we thought maybe we'd just add a few cheese on top of it.
Maybe some grated cheese, too.
Like some mozzarella, maybe Swiss, some Parmesan, some blue cheese, some feta cheese, a little Gouda cheese.
Top that off with grated cheese.
that would certainly spruce it up, don't you think?
That's your way to travel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, honestly, do you suppose Tony's upset with us?
Not at all.
I hope he isn't.
No.
Yeah. All right.
No.
Anyway, we also meant to mention, too, that we also had a wonderful sounding recipe. It sounded that way to me because I have a fondness in my heart for venison. But anyway, Eric Warren from another one of our listeners from way out in Clinton, Ohio, sent us a recipe book.
Did he really?
And you know Eric quite well, right?
Certainly. Hello, Eric, and his wife. I can't think of her name.
Alice?
Michelle.
Okay.
Alex and Michelle, They're coming up fishing this fall, as a matter of fact.
Well, anyway, Eric sent in his recipe. It's called, it's got a nice name, too. Mm. It's called Blue Cheese Venison Bake.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't have the entire recipe here with me. I kept it at home. Mm-hmm. But I've listed it on the website. If you want to go see Eric's recipe, go to sportingjournal.com. That takes you to the website. And just click on Outdoor Connections. Okay, you got that? Go to the website, sportingjournal.com, click on Outdoor Connections, and you'll see some recipes there, and look for Eric's venison, what is it called, blue cheese venison bake. Mm. Sounds fairly simple. It's like kind of like a meat pie.
Yeah, you could probably use any kind of meat on it.
Well, he makes it with venison burger.
Yeah.
Venison burger.
Yeah.
And I think it's got like, what is it? That dry French onion soup, mix in it a little.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Diane says she thinks that stuff is too sodium intense, but I like it. I've had it in other dishes. Sounds good, and we may try that. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, those two recipes are there, and check out the website at Maine Outdoor Connections after you go to the Sporting Journal website. Do we have James? Are you there, James?
I'm here, Paul. How are you?
Fine, sir. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime. It's such a beautiful night. I hope you guys don't mind. I'm taking the call on the porch tonight, out of Farmington, staring at the western mountains here, and there's a few crickets in the back.
That's unusual
for me.
Yeah, that sounds like a nice setting. Yeah, beautiful day today. We enjoyed it. We drove back from Grand Lake Stream this morning, Bob and I, and we like that Route 9. That's pretty drive when the weather's good.
It's a great drive.
James, so we invited you on because I know the Guides Association has taken a pretty strong position, I think, in opposition to the what's called the High Peaks Refuge. Can you tell our listeners who may not be familiar with this just exactly what that's about and what the feds hope to do?
Absolutely. And I just want to say I really appreciate you guys having me on. And I also want to say I was so glad to hear Fern Bossy dial in earlier. I just want to give a quick shout out. As you guys know, I spend a lot of days in the State House on behalf of different outdoor groups here in the state. And every several weeks I go in and I have a Fern Bossy hand-tied fly pin that goes on my sport coat in the State House. So I got that during the 2014 bear referendum, and I still go in quite frequently with it on my lapel. I appreciate Fern, and hopefully one of these days maybe I'll take the pin off and cast it out somewhere.
There you go.
I very much appreciate you guys having me on. For listeners that may not be as in tune as those of us here in Western Maine, what we've learned is that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed what they're calling a High Peaks National Wildlife Refuge here in western Maine. And, you know, High Peaks is certainly indicative of where it is. They are looking at a couple hundred thousand acres in between Rangeley and Flagstaff, for lack of a better description. I know a lot of listeners are probably fairly familiar with that area. And I do want to be clear that that 200,000-acre circle, you know, they put a map out. That's a big, scary circle. But I want to be absolutely clear, they are not talking about a 200,000-acre refuge. They're looking to purchase, on behalf of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, somewhere probably in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 20,000 acres, somewhere within that circle. And the way refuges work, I mean, lots of folks are probably familiar with the Moosehorn National Wildlife Refuge down in Washington County. There's also Umbagog, which was brought up earlier, which is sort of on the New Hampshire Maine border out near Errol, New Hampshire, and west of Rangeley. The way that the system works is that the federal government sort of looks at different areas that may be worthy of acquiring, and they come in, and it's not just a, hey, we need this type of scenario. It's typically a willing buyer, willing seller type of scenario, and so we would have to have willing landowners. And then that area would then be conserved, owned by the federal government and conserved to protect certain wildlife species. And primarily they look at rare and endangered species. They're looking at Atlantic salmon, and they're looking at waterfowl. So that's sort of their intent behind these acquisitions, is to protect those types of species. But with that also comes a whole, and you alluded to it, Paul, a whole range of concerns that many of us here in Franklin County and statewide groups and towns and local governments have become quite concerned about. And I also want to just say that what I have never heard from any of these stakeholders is that we don't support conservation in the Western Mountains. I think every single person that I've talked to supports conservation here in the High Peaks and in the Western Mountains. We just, you know, on behalf of those that I've been working with, we would like to see that conservation happen at a local level. You know, Land for Maine's Future here in the state of Maine has been a great success story. We would like to be able to see it under state control or local control rather than at the federal level, where decisions get made and it's awfully tough to try to navigate through federal agendas, not just of the federal government, but pretty extreme advocacy groups that, you know, they may be animal rights, they may be gun rights groups. You know, there's a whole plethora of groups out there that have an interest in these properties, and, James, and we've become quite concerned.
James, let me interrupt you for just a second. A couple of points, if you could clarify, that I've been confused on. I've read up on this thing, and I may have misunderstood something, but I thought the priority was to protect these high peaks. I gather from what you said, the priority is to protect wildlife more than the high peaks. Am I right about that, or am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely right. And frankly, you know, I'm sure everybody listening to this call can't disagree with the fact that we should be conserving wildlife. I mean, we all do that as sportsmen every single day with our license dollars and the efforts that we're putting into the land. But U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they really look at rare and endangered species. They look at species like Atlantic salmon in our fisheries, and they're looking at waterfowl, which is sort of a federally regulated game species.
So I'm still confused. The founding mission of the feds, when they create a refuge, is to protect something biological, not geographical, right? So they call it, is that a term the journalists coined? Or when they said High Peaks Refuge, you sort of say to yourself, oh, it's a refuge for the high peaks. But that's not their driving force. It's the wildlife, right?
It is the wildlife. And I think the reason, you know, and Paul Casey, who is sort of heading up this effort from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, certainly would be a good guest in the future. He can explain what their mission is. But what I understand is that they are looking at these high peaks here in Western Maine as sort of a critical area to conserve based on if climate seems to be a big theme in the discussions that we've had. And there's a lot of these species that probably do well up in these high peaks. And then we've got some, as you guys know, we've got some Atlantic salmon rivers and water bodies that run through the high peaks. Not a lot of Atlantic salmon there, but, you know, there used to be, and that is a good reason to explore conservation. Again, we're just really concerned about the federal ownership, and we would much prefer that that conservation happen at a local level.
Okay, another follow-up. You mentioned 5,000 to 20,000 acres. That's quite a range. Would these be contiguous acres, James, or would they be little blocks or parcels?
What I've gathered over the last several months, I think U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service really began exploring this earlier in the spring. You know, they've been going through this exploratory phase of what to do. What I gather is that it doesn't necessarily have to be contiguous, so they can pick pieces here and there, and it's very fluid in terms of what they can do. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has a lot of jurisdiction and a lot of flexibility in terms of what they're able to do, but they could pick and choose what they wanted to do.
Okay, we're going to have to take a short commercial break here. Do you mind hanging on, James? We got some other questions. Folks at home may have a question for you as well.
No, not at all. Would love to stay
on. All right. Thank you, sir. We'll be back here in just a minute. Bob has a message for you folks at home.
I certainly do. And thank you, Jim, for giving us a minute or two here. It won't take long. And from General Appliance and Brewer, they have a new area now. They've moved up the street a little ways, but they're still right in that same area on Center Street, right up on the corner. And they say, well, off-grid living made easy at General Appliance. They have gas ranges, gas refrigerators and freezers, gas lights, and composting toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Thank you, Norman. And is now owned by one of their workers, has been there for like 25 to 35 years, actually.
Yeah, he's now the boss.
Gary Coleman, he's the big boss down there now.
Yeah, he's the big cheese there
Elkin,
now.
He's retired. About time he retired, don't you think?
Well,
been
I don't know.
Been a working man for many years.
Yeah, Al did pay his dues, for sure.
Yes, he is. Yeah. So anyway, you get some great service there, and it's not like buying something from a box store, because you buy a Grange or a refrigerator from here, and you get service right along with it.
Yep, they back it up.
They'll back it up. Yeah. Absolutely, Paul. Yeah. Well said.
Okay.
And they have parts there, too. So you can, and they'll explain their parts if somebody, over the phone, they happened to you one time.
Yeah, I had a broken gas refrigerator way up in the boonies.
Yeah.
Couldn't get a repair person, called up Al. Al walked me through it over the iPhone. I mean, that's the way to go.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we fixed it.
Now, that's the kind of service you get from General Appliance and Brewer, and I'm sure Gary Coleman would do the same thing.
Yeah.
So the number to call there is 989. Write this down, 989-3714, and be sure to stop in and say hello to Gary and buy a brand-new appliance from him. And they have used appliances as well. You want to take a look at those.
Yes, they do.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, if you want to weigh in here, if you have a question for James, or maybe you like the idea of a refuge up there in the Western Peaks, if you do, call us. Either way, we'd like to hear from you at 1-800-966-1039. We have a call standing by. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with James Cody. Go ahead.
Hi there. This is Sneaker again.
Hi, Sneaker.
I got a question. Hi there. I got a question for James. Where does USF&G... the people that are proposing this deal, where do they stand on coyote and, well, let's just say coyotes for now? You know as well as I do, and a lot of anybody else that keeps track of what's going on, how close we came with IF&W this year as far as protecting the coyotes. I'll just leave it at that. So where do these people stand with coyotes?
Good question, Fern.
Because they,
right
they
on
are
target.
An invasive species.
Yep.
They're an invasive species in the state of Maine.
Good question. I like good questions. Good pointed question. James, you want to handle that?
Absolutely. Well, to the best that I can, and unfortunately, I don't have a lot of details on on how they feel about coyote predation programs and coyote hunting. But what I can tell you is that we know for a fact that bear baiting, for example, is banned on national wildlife refuges except for in the state of Alaska. And I just use that as an example of a hunting method, a hunting pursuit that many of us enjoy, and it's banned on refuges. We've also seen bans on lead ammunition in some of these national wildlife refuges. And of course, you know, that begins to limit and hamper your ability to harvest, whether it's coyotes or any other sort of game. You know, those limitations begin to restrict your ability to hunt on those federal lands. So while I don't know a lot about how they feel about coyote hunting in particular, what I can tell you is they do prohibit the use of baiting, which, you know, is a common practice in a lot of coyote hunting. And we've seen bans on lead ammunition, which, frankly, is also another restriction that limits our ability. So for me and many of the professional guides at the Maine Professional Guides Association and at the Maine Trappers Association, and the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine has been a strong partner in this as well, I think we're all a little concerned about the amount of restrictions that either we would see on day one or over time. You know, they would just continue to build and build, and as we're seeing in all sorts of other states, when it becomes federal ownership, you have all sorts of other interested parties, whether they are environmental groups or animal rights groups or anything along those lines, that begin to have a say, and they have a legitimate voice in the courts on these lands. And so for us, having it derived at a more local level and having local stakeholders with a lot of input is just extremely important.
Yeah, amen to that, brother. We have another caller. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with James Cody. Go ahead.
I have a really quick question. Would the U.S. Fish and Game be taking the people's land or whoever the landowners are through eminent domain, or will they give them a fair price for their land, or are they going to be working through the woods people, the lumber companies?
That's a great question, and I do want to be completely fair to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And frankly, I do also just want to say quickly that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is an ally and a friend of ours on so many issues. We just have a disagreement on this refuge proposal. But on in terms of national wildlife refuges, it's typically a willing buyer, willing seller transaction. So you need to be willing to sell your land in order for them to buy it. I don't believe that they use eminent domain, and it's probably at some sort of reasonable market price is what they buy it at.
Yeah. Okay, good question.
Okay, that's it. That's quick. I know you guys are almost over. All right. Adios.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, thank you for the call. Again, do we have any other callers backed up? Okay, James, I had another point I wanted to make. One of the things that makes me uncomfortable about this is that we know for a fact that a lot of the anti-hunting organizations, you know, the Big E environmental groups, a lot of them have brought suits against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And I understand out in Montana, the Fish and Wildlife Service tried to open up some of these refuges to hunting, and a lot of these groups have brought suits against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to get an injunction against increasing opportunities for recreational hunters. So a lot can happen, and my fear is if the feds take over, we have no control. It's all decisions are made in Washington, and we'd rather have it done at least in Augusta. That's the way I feel about it. Your comment?
You hit it right on the head, Paul. I mean, that has been a major theme of, and I want to say, I mean, we have numerous towns here in Franklin County. We've got the Franklin County Commissioners, Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, Maine Professional Guides Association, Maine Trappers Association, Maine Snowmobile Association. You know, there's not to mention several stakeholders in the forest products industry and beyond that are concerned about this. I think one of these major themes of ours has been, you know, it's a heck of a lot nicer to know that you can pick up the phone and call your local state representative or your local state senator and say, hey, I'm having trouble with access or with, you know, some opportunity on public lands here in the state of Maine when it's controlled by the Land Finance Future Program or something more local. Our congressional delegation has been wonderful on this. Senator Collins, Senator King, and Congressman Golden have come out in opposition to this proposal, and we have great relationships with them. But it becomes something much more difficult to navigate when you have concerns and problems, when you have to pick up the phone and call an agency that's headquartered in Washington, D.C., than it is here in Augusta, Maine.
Yeah.
So we totally agree with your assessment.
Were you at that exploratory meeting in Carabasset?
Yeah, actually, and I'll take responsibility for that meeting. It was a meeting that, you know, as this idea had been percolating, we'd been hearing a lot about this, but hadn't had a lot of direct conversations. I actually asked Paul Casey, and I'll give him credit. He came and he answered a whole heck of a lot of questions. But I actually called and invited folks to that meeting because I just felt like it was important to get this information out into the ether.
And a lot of opposition there, I guess, right?
Yeah, we've got absolutely local snowmobile clubs, municipalities, forest products companies, sportsmen's groups. There was a lot of concern.
We can squeeze in one quick call, I think. Let's take it. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors with James Cody. Can you make it fast?
Hello, Paul.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Scott from Great Pond. Just wanted to mention that I believe that this new federal land will eventually, not intentionally, but will eventually be used to reintroduce wolves into the state of Maine, as well as Roxanne Quincy's land.
Is that a reasonable worry, James?
I think it's reasonable to be concerned about that. Yep. I don't see it as a near-term threat, but we have seen that, to the caller's point, we've seen that exact same scenario happen. I believe it was in Michigan or Minnesota where they did that on another national wildlife.
Yeah, just too many uncertainties. I hope we tell them politely that we're not interested.
My hope, Paul, and I'll be very quick, my hope is that we can sit with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and be partners with them, but that we can just opt to change for a more locally controlled program.
Yeah. All right. But we'll be polite to them, right?
Absolutely. Okay. That's my number one goal.
All right.
They've been fair to us.
James, we appreciate you being with us tonight. We are plumb out of time. And thank you so much. Come back and see us again, okay?
I will. Thanks so much for the opportunity to talk to you guys soon.
Thank you, James. Okay, our guest next week here on Maine Outdoors is going to be columnist Erin Merrill, who writes a Women Outdoors column for the Northwoods Sporting Journal. She's always a delightful guest to have. We may have her here in person or by phone. I'm not sure yet. But be with us next week right here on Maine Outdoors.